starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you. About living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching us close, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello and welcome to Spingle and Friends. It is Thursday, June 25th, 2015. Where has this month gone? Amazing. I guess it, when you're having a good time, time passes very quickly. Okay, this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs, where it is a very pleasant, sunny morning. My websites are spingola.com and, for the present time, ScreeningSandyHook.com, which will ultimately change to ScreeningSandyHook.net. There you may find information about my four books, as well, of course, as at my own website, Spingola.com. Please also visit SpingolaSpeaks.net, a website created and maintained by a very good friend and listener. There you will find links as well as the audio files of my recent radio programs, along with a comment section and a comprehensive list of all the Kindle versions of the books produced, written by the variety of guests that I have had on the program. I hope that each of you will subscribe to that site. And I hope that you will go to that site to purchase books, not only the Kindle version, but also books such as Michael Collins Piper's books. You may also get books by Michael Collins Piper, the e-books, by visiting amfirstbooks.com. Remember that we will be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, and we invite you to participate in the chat room, which is spingola.chatango.com. Again, we will take questions later on in the broadcast when I open the line to questions, and that telephone number is 646-787-1915. Okay. Today I thought what I would do, and I guess the reason I'm doing this is because we are all just bogged down with so many things to do, so many things to take care of, that we often just do not take the time to sit down and read a book. We just don't do it. It's much easier to get information. We all like to get as much information as quickly as possible. But perhaps while you are listening to the program, you might be doing something else. I don't know. I'm not sure what you might be doing, checking your email or whatever. But anyway, I just thought I would try to encourage interest in this particularly wonderful book so that you might order the Kindle book, the e-book of it, or buy it in hardcover. I mean, it's a fabulous book. And if you were to have 20 books on your shelf as a reference, this would be one of the first ones that I would choose. So everyone should own a copy of Final Judgment. Okay, the complete title is Final Judgment, The Missing Link in the JFK Assassination Conspiracy. And today, I've been kind of skipping around and reading from some of the back material, because back material is so fascinating. But today, what I think I'm going to do, and it's very compatible, of course, with the other with the other information that I have provided, is to, well, start with chapter one, because it's just kind of a great opening. And chapter one is called The Tie That Binds, what all of the most commonly accepted JFK assassination theories have in common. And that is the never mentioned Israeli connection. And then we will skip to the cover-up. Now, there's a reason why so many books, well, they all have commonality. But 99% of them fail to mention the Israeli connection, and I think that's very purposeful. And it has to do with covering up the evidence, concealing the real culpable entity behind the assassination. Now, if you are going to distract people, no matter what the event is, whether you're talking about 9/11, whether you're talking about the JFK assassination, whether you're talking about recent events, the big, what I call cover-up operations, they're designed to distract you. They raise all of these ridiculous questions, all of these theories, all of these distracting kinds of things that actually pull you away from what really happened and the real, real significance behind what it is they're trying to cover up. So, and there's a lot of cover-up. You will find that most of the cover-up operations, the obfuscation operations, are in, I hate to say this, but they are in the alternative media. Because that is a place where skeptical people congregate, expecting to find the truth. Never expecting that that is the most popular environment, a psychological environment, where people can disseminate all of this garbage. So, and it's very interesting, and I plan on talking a lot more about this in the future. But anyway, let's start with chapter one today. And of course, if you have the ebook or the PDF file, I invite you to read along with me. And this is really important. Okay, most people obtain much of what they believe visually. In other words, 75% of the people learn more from what they can see, okay, rather than what they hear. And that is why videos and television and movies have such an impact on people's perceptions. If they watch a movie that seems to be a documentary, 75% of the people will base their perceptions on what they see in that movie, that video. And so it's important to recognize that the function of television, which, as I was talking with a friend yesterday, a very good friend, television, really, when you talk about technocracy, television, being developed in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, was one of the functions of television was to create people's perceptions, to create mass mass propaganda, mass belief. Now, prior to the advent of television, people read a lot more than they do now. People were not distracted by so much. They had time to sit down with a book and concentrate and interact with that book. And when you're reading a book, you are interacting. You have your mind engaged, and you have to be thoroughly, not distracted. At least I can't do two or three things at one time. But you are interacting with that book as you are reading it. You are asking questions. You are critically thinking. But when you are in front of a television, when you are looking at a video, your critical thinking kind of shuts down to a certain extent. And so it's very important that is why people use a lot of video to teach or to do something devious, like promote, all these stupid theories. Okay. Chapter 1, The Tie That Binds. That's my little soliloquy for today. Let me just check with the chatters and say, hi. Okay, we're talking about mass manipulation. Yes. Somebody says TV equals weapon of mass deception. Absolutely. Okay. Okay. Who sounds Flemish? Is that like from Flanders? I don't know. Okay. I'll quit joking around here and although I'm being very very open and giving you my little opinions here. Okay. Who killed John F. Kennedy? That question has plagued the world for a generation. And when they say generation, when they're talking about that kind of a thing, they're talking a 40-year span. That is typically considered a generation. What is it that we do know about the JFK murder that ties all of the differing theories together? What is it that all of the theories have in common? The blame for the assassination has been placed on numerous power groups, perhaps working independently or together. Most often named have been the CIA or rogue elements thereof, organized crime, and the anti-Castro Cuban network. Yet, one power in particular, Israel and its spy agency, the Mossad, links all of these forces together. Israel, however, is the central player whose role has been consistently ignored. Alrighty, everyone on Earth, on November 22nd, 1963, it sometimes seems, was involved in a plot to assassinate JFK. If all of those alleged conspirators, all of whom have denied the allegations were there, it's lucky anyone got out of Dealey Plaza alive. These were the words of one journalist, Terry Catchpole, reflecting on the controversy over Oliver Stone's Hollywood All-Star extravaganza, JFK, and of widespread interest in the JFK assassination in general. Catchpole cites groups often alleged to have been involved in some way with the JFK assassination, although this summary by no means is complete, ignoring in particular the CIA as an institution. Usually when people say, the CIA was involved, they say, it was just rogue elements. It wasn't the CIA, actually. Okay, so here's the list. Cuban communist, Cuban anti-communist, military-industrial complex, a renegade CIA clique, organized crime, Soviet communist, the FBI, and the mastermind. This final theory, according to Catchpole, is that, and I quote, the mafia had actually taken over the Howard Hughes organization from the bedridden recluse, and it was run by a Mr. X, possibly organized crime syndicate boss Meyer Lansky. Now, each and every one of these theories, of course, has its own advocates. Each and every one of these theories, additionally, has been intertwined with one or more of the others. And now, the advent of Stone's film, coupled with the subsequent release of several new books on the assassination, most notably Mark Lane's Plausible Denial, which proved CIA complicity in the president's murder, has brought new interest in the controversy. I am sure, this is me talking, I am sure that people generally, or the people who want the cover-up artist, people who've been employed in obfuscation operations since the JFK assassination, those operatives would prefer that people not be interested in the controversy. That, well, let's just let this thing die and go on. Gosh, that was history. Let us go on. Let's move on. Forget history. Well, I always say history is prologue. When you look at the controversial subjects, the events that all seem to be in a box, an event all by itself, you don't look at the whole picture, which is unfortunate. So, okay, back to Mike's book. Perhaps someday there will even be a book which places the blame for the assassination on, as New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison used to say, and I quote, retired circus clowns, unquote. However, it was not retired circus clowns who killed John F. Kennedy, at least so far as we know. Which reminds me of an article that I wrote, a program I did recently, Bring on the Clowns, which, okay, that has nothing to do with this, but anyway. Israel's Central Role, a subtitle within the chapter. This book contends, and remember that I'm reading from the book. This is not my work. I want to give credit where credit is due. This is from the book, America's Number One Band Book, Final Judgment by Michael Collins Piper, The Missing Link in the JFK Assassination Conspiracy. And of course, without my saying so, of course I'm dedicating this, all of these programs that I've done on his book, to Mike. And I just have a feeling that maybe he's listening somewhere. So here's to you, Mike. We miss you and we love you. Okay. Back to Israel's Central Role. This book contends that Israel's Mossad was a primary player Israel's Central Role. We exchanged so many emails in the past year and shared so much. I just miss him. I just miss the guy. I really do. Every day I miss him. Okay. Moving along without getting choked up. This book contends that Israel's Mossad was a primary player alongside the CIA and the Lansky crime syndicate in the JFK assassination conspiracy, and that, in fact, the Mossad's role was probably the driving force behind the conspiracy. It is clearly Israel and its Mossad, as we shall document, which is the one force which ties all of the most frequently mentioned alleged conspirators together. The CIA, the anti-Castro Cuban forces, organized crime, and most specifically and more significantly than the so-called mafia, the Meyer Lansky crime syndicate. The connections are far more sinister and go far deeper than most might imagine. In final judgment, we will examine all of this in detail. Israel's motive. Israel, as we shall see, had a very distinct motive, not only to orchestrate Kennedy's removal from office, but also to elevate his successor, Lyndon B. Johnson, into the White House. I have such animosity toward this scummy scoundrel. That's my words. Okay, back to Mike's words. As did, of course, many of those other elements in the conspiracy that resulted in Kennedy's murder. Never once, however, at least in standard assassination research, has the suggestion that Israel had a hand in Kennedy's murder ever been uttered. Yet the evidence is there. Evidence that has lain dormant or has otherwise been ignored or gone unrecognized for its significance. This is me talking. This is either by deliberate techniques or disinformation or misinformation, but I believe it is very deliberate. Okay. Indeed, back to Mike. Indeed, virtually all of the facts brought together in final judgment have been drawn from recognized volumes in the field of JFK assassination research and in other standard sources. Now, let me just say something here before we go on, is that a lot of people get most of their information exclusively from the alternative media. In fact, somebody asked me the source of some information that I was giving one day. They were in my chat room and they said, where did you find that source? And I said, it was in the New York Times. And they said, the New York Times? Well, everybody knows that everything in the New York Times is a big lie. No, people. If everything in the New York Times was a big fat lie, well, then it would be very obvious. If every criminal had a great big sign on their forehead saying, I am a criminal, I'm out to hurt you, then everything would be very obvious. No, everything in the New York Times or any other mainstream media is not a big fat lie. You do have to be discriminating, but you cannot get all of your information from just one environment, such as the alternative media. You have to educate yourself well enough so that you can question and be skeptical about things that you find both in the alternative, so-called alternative media, and in the mainstream media. And you also have to understand that there may be not that much difference between the two. And if we learn anything from Lenin, we learned that he was famous for saying, I'm not going to quote it, but basically what he says, we're going to control both sides of every issue so that we can handle the results. In other words, they're going to control the alternative media, they're going to control the mainstream media so that they can control the results being, the results, he used the word results, so that they can control our perceptions. We need to understand this, okay? Alrighty, back to Mike. and his fabulous book. One former member of Congress, Representative Paul Finley, whom I've spoken with, himself has publicly suggested that Israel indeed may have had a hand in the JFK assassination. In the March 1992 issue of the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, Finley points out, and I quote, "It is interesting, but not surprising to note, that in all the words written and uttered about the Kennedy assassination, Israel's intelligence agency, the Mossad, has never been mentioned. And yet, a Mossad motive is obvious," unquote. Finley lays out the motive, a motive that we outline in detail in the pages of this book. Israeli leaders never trusted the Kennedys. They were aware that when President Kennedy's father, Joseph Kennedy, was ambassador to Great Britain, he frequently praised Nazi Germany. And, of course, Mike did a program recently. One of his latest podcasts was on President Kennedy's father and what some of the ties that he made. Alrighty. During John Kennedy's, and I'm quoting from Findlay, during John Kennedy's campaign for the presidency, a group of New York Jews had privately offered to meet his campaign expenses if he would let them set his Middle East policy. He did not agree. As president, he provided only limited support to Israel. On the other hand, Lyndon Johnson had demonstrated his strong support for Israel throughout his political career. The government of Israel, therefore, had every reason to believe that its interests would be better advanced with Johnson as president, and indeed they were. After Kennedy's death, the United States, for the first time, began large-scale shipments of arms to Israel. Certainly, the Mossad possessed the resources to carry out an assassination almost any place on earth. Unquote. All those words are from Finley. And Finley wrote a very wonderful book. I don't have it on my desk right in front of me, but I do have it on my in my downstairs library. In my middle library, I have the downstairs library, the first floor library, and then the third floor library. Okay. Finley concludes, back to the book, Finley concludes, and I quote, "Am I accusing the Mossad of complicity? Absolutely not. I have no evidence of such. My point is simply this. On this question, as on almost all others, American reporters and commentators cannot bring themselves to cast Israel in an unfavorable light, despite the obvious fact that Mossad complicity is as plausible as any of the other theories." Alrighty. In these pages, getting back to Mike, we will provide Congressman Finley and the readers with the evidence. We will let the readers make the final judgment. Okay, some subterranean association. All right, I'm just going to peek in the chat room and check and see if there are any questions. Okay, you have the sixth edition, but you don't see any date in it. The sixth edition, the paperback, the date is 2005. The sixth edition, the second printing, is 2005. At least it's in the front page of mine. Yes, my whole house is a library. I have a book problem. Yeah, and the fifth edition also has a lot of pictures. Okay, the sixth edition has all the pictures, And the book by Finley is They Dare to Speak Out. Thank you, Murr. That is the book that I have. And after reading that book, I thought, oh, I have got to get this gentleman on my radio program. I called him up, got his phone number, called him up. His wife had just passed away. And he said, you know, I'm just not up to being on a program right now. Let's do it later. And later, just never got around to it. So, anyway. Okay. Let's go back to our book. There's some comments and questions. For those of you who would like to acquire as many of MCP books as possible without getting gouged on Amazon, you can use abebooks.com, which is the one that I got the Hitler books from. And they are coming out. Well, let's see. Did I get them there? I got some of them there. I got some of them. Let's see. Where did I get some of them? The Nationalist Free Press, which works through Abe. They are in the process of reproducing the real Hitler. So those of you who attempted to get that book and were not able to, be patient, because the next one that they come out with, then you can purchase one that's not spiral bound. All right. The other thing I do want to encourage you to do, if you are looking for Kindle books, then please order them through SpinkolaSpeaks.net. Okay? All righty. Let's get back to the book here. Some subterranean association. One leading assassination investigator, Carl Oglesby, recently summarized his own decades of personal research by saying, and I quote, "It was an inside job," unquote. He said, and I quote, "something on the order of the enterprise which we discovered in the Iran/Contra scandal." At the same time, he added as a caveat, and I quote, "I cannot bring myself to believe that an institution such as the CIA, for example, could in any formal and regular sense decide to kill the president." Okay, I've got to say something about the ABC agencies of the U.S. government. All of them, most of them, the majority of them were created for the benefit of the multinational corporations. And if you look at the board of directors on the multinational corporations, you will see that there are some people, individuals, who might be sitting on as many corporate boards as 50. Okay? There is a minority of people who are who maintain a majority of the control of corporations, and the CIA, which is a relatively new ABC agency, was created for the benefit of those corporations, and it was a spinoff what's a spinoff? You know, the same friend and I that were talking yesterday, we have these shortcuts. Like instead of saying Health and Human Services, we say HHS. And then pretty soon we forget what HHS stands for. And that was the example that my friend used. And everybody can say, oh, Central Intelligence Agency. But they are a spinoff from the OSS, the Office of Special Services, which functioned throughout the Second World War and quite possibly before. And of course, we had these same kinds of information agencies during World War I. And so if you really believe that these ABC agencies that are created by the government are to benefit us, you and me, then you're really going to have to read my series that I did when I sat for Clint Richardson on the FDA. The FDA was not created to protect our health. The FDA was created to protect the manufacturer of all these products, whether we're talking butter or whether we're talking pharmaceutical drugs. And every single manufacturer of any product that the FDA looks at, Food and Drug Administration, every product, the manufacturer of every product has to pay the FDA for the approval. You don't get it for nothing. They all have to pay some money. So it's kind of, okay, here. It's like I go in with a check and I say, I'm going to produce this product. It's probably, a little toxic, but here's a check for $3 million. So could you just give it your approval so we can get the darn thing marketed to the millions of people who will probably buy this stuff? Okay, that's another little one of my tangents for the day. Back to the book. But people, just let me add something else. People just cannot believe that a institution such as the CIA could in any formal and regular sense decide to kill the president. No, but if you're talking about, okay, it's whether a person is a president or just a common citizen or somebody that they want to knock off, they're going to knock you off. If you are against what the multinational corporations want to do, then you're a target, okay? You are a target, whether you're a small target or a big target. The president obviously was a very, very large target. And certainly that public assassination said something to the less than large targets. Okay, so now I'm going to go back to the book. Final judgment suggests that it was Israel's Mossad that was indeed the very subterranean association that did cut through all the various entities which found themselves brought into the JFK assassination conspiracy. In a recent interview, another respected JFK assassination researcher, Peter Dale Scott, perhaps lends further credence to the theory we are about to present. Scott believes that there were a variety of forces at work behind the JFK assassination. He specifically fingers Lyndon Johnson's backers, and this is a quote, Lyndon Johnson's backers, particularly those who had a stake in the military-industrial complex, unquote. And another quote from Scott is, an intelligence/mafia connection that included members of the intelligence community who were involved with military, industrial, corporate backers of Lyndon Johnson, who in turn were involved with mafia people. At a minimum, according to Scott, and I quote, you have to consider this triad of forces. Note Scott's words. At a minimum, quote, unquote. This, of course, suggests that other forces were indeed involved. Final judgment not only suggests that this was, in fact, Israel's Mossad, but also clearly pinpoints the Mossad connections. Now, recently, in the last week, I gave out a website. And keep in mind that politicians are pretty much all involved in this. And if Congress is going to, it knows about a police action, which they call the Korean War, and if they know about that Lyndon Johnson was going to facilitate and enlarge the Vietnam, America's invasion of Vietnam, well, where do you think they're going to put their money? Gosh. I wonder. Okay, so I invite you to to visit, but not during the program, but afterwards, opensecrets.org. And it, well, it shows individual contributors, and it's, you just have to understand that that Congress is a collaborator with the multinational corporations. They're all in bed together, okay? All of them in bed together. Okay. Somebody's speaking about margarine, and a very dear friend of mine provided me with how they did margarine, how they made margarine, and it was amazing. And I had it on my website some time back, but she did provide me with the ingredients. And as somebody in the chat room says, when a coworker told me about 15 years ago that margarine was one molecule away from being plastic, I immediately went back to butter. It also started a long-term quest for nutrition truth, thanks to the internet. So, I've always used butter. I've never used margarine. And you can apply the same thing to Crisco. It's as one of our chatters says, it's nothing but jet lubricants. Yeah, okay. Anyway, eat butter, people. Don't eat margarine. Alrighty, let's go back to our book. We're never going to get through chapter one if I don't if I keep talking. And okay, other intelligence networks. Scott himself goes one step further, and I'm talking about Peter Dale Scott. Scott himself goes one step further without naming the Mossad. He said, in my research, the most suggestive clues have emerged from a relatively restricted circle within what I call the dark quadrant of suppressed relationships or deep politics. Excuse me. A circle within the tripartite world of first, the CIA, defense, and other intelligence networks. Second, the underworld of organized crime and anti-Castro Cubans. And third, corporate interest with links both to the intelligence and defense communities and also to organized crime, which I was just talking about with regard to the ABC agencies. The key, says Scott, is, and I quote, is that all those in this dark quadrant would have resisted its exposure whether or not they were key plotters, unquote. Final judgment concurs with Scott's judgment. Again, note Scott's words, and I quote, or Mike quotes, CIA, defense, and other intelligence networks, unquote. As I pointed out in my first book, one of the first ethnic groups was, and I'm not gonna say Jews. My very wise friend also said, you know, we need to be very careful about using that word. We should, in fact, use parasites. Because when people think about, when the average person hears the word Jew, they automatically think of a religious group, which makes it easier for people who are listening to all the people who are saying, oh, it's the Jews, oh, the Jews are behind everything. The first thing they're going to think of, well, that's a religion. And we've all been brought up to think, well, religion, I mean, that's, you know, that's cutting it pretty close to home. And then it's easier for people to say, oh, that person's nothing but an anti-Semite. But when you say, as my wise, kind friend said, and he happens to be in the chat room today, he said, we would be wiser to use what more adequately describes their behavior and their actions, which aren't always the same, then it would be much more descriptive to say parasites, because, well, it's so much more descriptive. It doesn't say, oh, they're talking about a religion. No. But when you say the word Jew, people automatically think, ah, religion. And then it's easier for people to accuse you of being anti-Semitic. If you use the word parasite, people can relate, okay? People think parasite, they think blood-sucking parasites, blood-sucking leeches. Okay, enough about that. Back to the book. As we demonstrate, and which is not really so very secret, it is Israel's Mossad above and beyond any other intelligence network, foreign or domestic, that has been unusually close, almost incestuously so, to the CIA in a variety of international ventures. And as I mentioned in my first book, and then I lost my track. But that ethnic group is one of the first to cement an international network that has proceeded from 1843 with the creation of the B'nai B'rith in New York City. And it was at about the same time, if you look at timelines, that this network, a worldwide network, was created. So they have the wherewithal to network with other intelligence networks, because that's what they do. That is where they have their experience. Okay, the media's role, back to Mike's book. What's more, we go one step beyond Scott's conclusions. Final judgment points out the highly significant role of the American media in its role in the cover-up. The cover-up of the JFK assassination conspiracy could never have succeeded without the support of a willing media. The fact is that Israel and its supporters in the American media have a long and intimate relationship. Until recent years, and even still today, criticism of Israel and its misdeeds have been forgotten in the establishment media, as noted previously in the comments by Congressman Findley. I used to be a congressman here in Illinois. Okay, false flags. We will illustrate by several notable examples how primary friends of Israel in the American media have been key players in floating false leads. Okay, my very wise friend and I were also talking about false flags yesterday. It just seems like everything that happens is termed a false flag. But if you look back in history, false flags meant that, for instance, with the Lusitania, I mean, it was full of Americans, it was full of American ammunition, and it was full of, you know, things that were going to Britain, including American citizens. But they pretended that, although they didn't have a different flag on it, they pretended it was, well, it wasn't really what it was. But typically, when you talk about a false flag, you're talking about a ship that hoists a different flag, the flag of another nation, in order to blame the target nation. They hoist a different flag so that the target nation will think that it was another nation that was invading them. That is the true use of false flag. I think Mike, in using false lead, provides a better term than false flag. False flag is really kind of a misnomer. When you apply it to other events, then when people who want to say, oh, those people are nuts, they don't even know what a false flag really is. They're misusing this term. And that is what my very bright friend said. And I thought, so I went through my three books in my trilogy. And I used it twice in my first book. And yet there are instances where, of course, false flags were used. You can think of the invasion of Vietnam. You can think of all kinds of other invasions. But let's be more distinctive in what we call things. Let's sharpen up our rhetoric and our terminology so that when all of this stuff hits the fan, people are not going to accuse us of misleading the population or of using the wrong jargon so that they can ridicule us. Let's sharpen up our terminology. Okay? Okay, back to the book. And thank you, my dear, dear friend. I learned so much from you. Okay. So what these false leads that have directed attention and suspicion elsewhere. False leads. Mike, perfect terminology. Let's call it what it is. False lead. This is a phenomenon never before examined in studying the JFK assassination, and which explains in large part why the real truth about the assassination conspiracy has remained hidden for so long, all of the research notwithstanding. And so we and this is me talking again, and so when people are given all of these false leads, you know, hundreds, if you don't like the theory behind door one, go to door two, go to door three. Hey, we've got 50 theories for you. Just choose one. People are going to just say, well, I guess we're just never going to know who killed JFK or why. We just are never going to know. Look at all the choices. My gosh, we're never going to be able to solve this problem. And you can apply this same tactic, the same distractive multi-choice methodology to every event, including current events. Okay. Keep the phrase in mind. False leads. Okay. In chapter 3, we will examine numerous instances wherein Israel's Mossad itself utilized quote unquote false flags to cover up its own role in a wide variety of assassination conspiracies and crimes around the globe. And I have noted in my book that there are countries that have never resorted to false flags. You will find that the United States, Britain, I refuse to call it Great Britain because there's nothing great about it, that Britain, the United States, both under the control of the parasites, use false flags. The traditional false flag terminology to cover up their own role in a wide variety of assassination conspiracies. Now, had the Israeli state been able to sink the ship on June 8th, 1967, 7. They would have blamed it on the Arabs. Okay? That is what they would have done. They didn't. They were so sure that they were going to sink that ship that they didn't even bother to paint the planes that they were using with a false flag, because they were sure, because of the media complicity that they had and because of the government complicity that they had, they were certain, absolutely certain, that they were going to be successful. Okay, back to the book. Back to the book. Alrighty. Professor Scott, like many JFK researchers, has long focused on the change of policy toward Vietnam that took place as a result of John F. Kennedy's assassination. He also points out that there was, additionally, a change of policy toward Latin America. However, in these pages, we demonstrate beyond question that the most profound and, in retrospect, probably most lasting and unusual reversal in the conduct of American foreign policy was in the arena of U.S./Israeli relations. These facts, unfortunately, have been neglected by even the most serious researchers into the JFK assassination. And here's my talking again. Even serious researchers get sidelined. They get sidetracked by false leads that they get away from the why and the who and the Israeli relations. Okay? The purpose of final judgment, you see, is not to prove once and for all that there was indeed a conspiracy to assassinate President John F. Kennedy and to perpetuate a cover-up of that conspiracy. That has been proven time and again in an endless array of books, monographs, magazine articles, even in the pages of several novels. Instead, final judgment takes the commonly accepted theories one step further and binds them all together, all too well, in a frightening scenario that is surely so very close to the truth. Many desired JFK's removal from the presidency. However, as we note throughout these pages, research over the years has, for a variety of reasons, ignored the bitter conflict between the Israeli state of Israel. I just have a difficult time saying state of Israel. I usually try to say Israeli state and John F. Kennedy. That was me talking again. Likewise, as Mike said, likewise, researchers have, again, for a variety of reasons, innocent or otherwise, ignored the very close connections between Israel and each of the diverse groups, all of whom had a reason to want to end John F. Kennedy's presidency. The Meyer Lansky organized crime syndicate, the Mafia, the anti-Castro Cubans, and the CIA. In final judgment, we present a theory that, in the free market of ideas, deserves consideration, controversial though it will be. Let me just interject something here. I'm sorry I keep interjecting stuff, but I note I'm a wordsmith. I pick up on words and okay. He said in the last statement, in final judgment we present a theory that in the free market of ideas deserves consideration, controversial though it will be. This is evidence in my mind of Mike's humility. He does not say, I will present. He says, we present. And oftentimes I have another friend I used to get a little bit exasperated because Mike, frequently on his program, although he was speaking to the choir, would often say, now I know that there are those out there who are not going to believe me. Mike had been the target of so much criticism and so much hate. So he was targeted from the time this book came out. Well, before that, he was targeted probably with everything that he wrote. He was so used to defending himself that even among friends, even among the so-called choir that he was presenting information to on his radio program, he felt that he felt that maybe somebody wouldn't believe him. And it just tells me that he was really kind of a humble guy, okay? Sometimes he didn't act like he was, and I don't mean that to be a criticism, but by his very nature, he was a humble guy. He always gave support to newbies, to people whose work he appreciated, and he's always tried to be positive. And when he talks about other writers, there's not a hint of ad hominem attacks. He did not attack Peter Dale Scott. He's not attacking these other writers. He's giving them the benefit of the doubt. Okay? I found that when he felt the worst, and that's been in the last year, he was feeling bad. For a couple of years. He had not been suffering from diabetes for very long. And I'm going to talk about some of the personal emails that he said that I could share. I'm going to present those in the next couple of 2 or 3 weeks. But he was feeling pretty lousy. And let me be the first to say that when you're feeling really bad, you're going to be kind of, you're not going to be as thoughtful and kind as your true nature indicates. You're going to be so darn sick of the attacks that you are going to be reactive, and you're going to be reactive. And some guys are reactive, and they use a bit of profanity. And I must say that whenever I got an email from Mike that when I was part of the group and he used a bit of profanity in the emails, he would always email me privately and say, I'm sorry. He said, I know that you're a lady. And so he wasn't feeling good, people. He was feeling pretty lousy. And I think that we need to see him as a whole person. Okay, I'm going to check in the chat room, and okay, let's go. Okay, no questions, comments. There's one comment. One becomes a salty dog when under attack and sick. Thank you, Techno. And that is so true, okay? That is so true. And so we have to understand that. We need to understand that. We need to be fair. And he never used ad hominem attacks. And I think that's terrific. Okay. Except when he was really sick. And seemed kind of understandable. I cut him some slack. Okay, and people know how much I detest profanity. But in his case, I cut him some slack because I know how he was feeling. Okay, John F. Kennedy put it best. And we're back to the quote, okay? Or back to the book. A nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people. Isn't that wonderful? Let me repeat that. John F. Kennedy himself put it best. A nation that is afraid to let the people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people. I'm going to post that in the chat room because I think that's important. And that is why censorship is a bad thing. And to censor each other in a psychological generated environment, which often is the case with the alternative media, you have to ask, why are all these people trying to censor a few people? Got to ask that question, people. Okay, now I'm going back to the book. I'm feeling very philosophical today. Back to the book. What all the commonly alleged conspiracies are tied together by is the one strand that has been consistently ignored. And that, of course, is the Israeli connection. In final judgment, we will consider this. Unfortunately, long ignored hidden aspect of history. The thought just crossed my mind that I just said some words that I think that Mike would have wanted you to hear. And it just kind of crossed my mind. Okay, so in final judgment, we will consider this unfortunately long ignored hidden aspect of history. What final judgment proves is not only that Israel had reason to conspire against JFK, but that Israel was in a central position to not only coordinate the assassination scheme, and did, but also the subsequent cover-up. All of this in close collaboration with its co-conspirators in the CIA and organized crime. Most specifically, those elements intimately linked to syndicate boss Meyer Lansky. Now remember that in order to maintain a cover-up, that certain things have to play, and this is me talking again, being philosophical. In order to maintain a cover-up, certain things have to be in play. In other words, the CIA has to maintain the cover-up, the media has to maintain the cover-up, the co-conspirators have to maintain the cover-up. In other words, if there were an event, contemporary event that somebody said, those people were all actors, then those actors would obviously have to continue acting as the people they were pretending to act in behalf of for the rest of their lives. Okay? You just don't fade in and out. The cover-up must be have enough collaborators to maintain the cover story, which I hope to get to today. Alrighty. So, Israel, as much as the Mafia or the CIA, for example, stood to benefit greatly from the death of America's 35th president, and did, JFK's assassination set the stage for Israel to become a major power. Okay, I just received an email. Let me just look and see if it's. Let me just look. I also received another one. Let me just see what that is. I received this one actually before the program. Let me just read you this one. And I quote, this is an email. As an expert on creatures from outer space, no one is more qualified to speak about the Kennedy assassination than Jim Mars. David Icke also pointed out that not long after the assassination, the Beatles were transformed into extraterrestrial beings. I don't pay much attention to David Icke, but I'm just reading you the letter. I'm just going to take out one person's name. All four of them, meaning the Beatles, were members of the Knights of Malta, which conspiracy theorists, and here's where I take the name out, have identified as having close connections to the New World Order. Do you believe in coincidences? Well, as someone famously said, is it FDR said, in politics there are no coincidences. However, I think it becomes very easy for people, particularly in the alternative movement, and I've done this myself, it's very easy to say, the Illuminati did it, or, the Jews did it, or the Freemasons did it, or this. Okay, there may be people who are in an influential position who may be Freemasons, anyway, that's just an email that I thought I would share. But okay, so Mike isn't saying the Jews did it. He's telling you exactly who. Okay, so back to the book. Israel, as much as the Mafia or the CIA example, stood to benefit greatly from the death of America's 35th president, and did. JFK's assassination set the stage for Israel to become a major power. Research into the Kennedy assassination is most difficult, if only because the literature is so immense, the web so tangled, and the surfeit of theories and potential conspirators so seemingly unending. That's where people begin to feel, what's the point? We're never going to solve it. What's more, some assassination researchers have latched onto their own unique theories and, as a consequence, have failed to look elsewhere, in the direction of Israel, for example. With all of this in mind, let us proceed on the basis that there are certain areas of agreement. And the subtitle, another subtitle within this chapter one, generally accepted conclusions. Our final judgment, outlined in these pages, rests on a foundation composed of the following generally accepted conclusions about the nature of the JF assassination conspiracy. That there was a conspiracy to kill John F. Kennedy. In other words, it wasn't just some lone gunman. There was a conspiracy. A conspiracy is when two or three people, two or three groups, get together and collaborate in a conspiracy to do something major. Number two, that the conspiracy itself involved elements of the U.S. intelligence community, the CIA in particular. Number three, that organized crime figures played a major part in the conspiracy. Number four, that anti-Castro Cubans were actively participating in the conspiracy at the urging of and or manipulation by the CIA and elements of organized crime. Again, I think that we can use that term, false leads, when we look at, okay, if the CIA was manipulating the anti-Castro Cubans, they were creating a false lead to get people to look, let's look at this group. We're sure this group had, they did it all. Okay, number five, back to the book. That somehow Lee Harvey Oswald, wittingly or unwittingly, was brought into the conspiracy and that the conspirators planned false evidence to link Oswald with Fidel Castro and the Soviets. Number six, that Oswald was involved in some manner of U.S. intelligence activity, even if he was unaware those activities were sponsored or manipulated by some element of the U.S. intelligence community. Remember that we function in compartmentalized states, that the left hand doesn't know exactly what the right hand's doing, that you might just have this very, very small part in the whole of something and not realize that you're just one of the bricks in this big, tall pyramid, which takes me back to this wonderful conversation I had yesterday. That Jack Ruby, moving on to the next point, that Jack Ruby was either an active participant in the assassination conspiracy itself or was used in some fashion to manipulate Oswald prior to the assassination of JFK. The next point, that Ruby was actively involved in organized crime activities and that he was, as a consequence of that involvement, also linked with organized crime activities that operated in conjunction with or ran parallel with U.S. intelligence community activities. That the Central Intelligence Agency was cognizant of the activities of both Oswald and Ruby and certainly manipulated both. Next point, that Oswald was publicly executed, publicly I inserted that word, by Jack Ruby for the purpose of silencing Oswald forever. And of course, anytime there's a public assassination, well, it just makes other people think, wow, I certainly am not going to get involved in any whistleblowing. Boy, look what happens when you get involved. Next point, that a major cover-up of the JFK assassination conspiracy was undertaken following the events in Dallas. Next point, that the cover-up involved elements of the federal government, including the CIA. Next point, that the Warren Commission and the House Assassinations Committee were deliberate participants in the cover-up. Next point, that the cover-up conspiracy was conducted for a wide variety of motivations, both ostensibly patriotic, quote-unquote, and otherwise, including, but not limited to, A, bearing intelligence community connections to the assassination conspiracy, B, protecting organized crime elements involved, C, preventing hostilities between the United States and foreign nations, and in parentheses, whether it be the Soviet Union or Castro's Cuba, D, resolving questions about the assassination in the public's mind, both here and abroad. Okay, let me just interject something here. Preventing hostilities between the United States and the foreign nations, whether it be the Soviet Union or Castro's Cuba. Keep in mind that the Soviet Union, following World War II, was isolated. The Cold War was going on. Who had the ability to have a Cold War? And Castro's Cuba was, of course, sanctioned. It's one of the country, it had the longest running sanctions of any country in the world. They could not get essential resources. Okay. Now, on to the last point, that the controlled media actively encouraged and or participated in the cover-up due to its links to the CIA, the intelligence community in general, and organized crime. Now, we know from Woodward and Bernstein, in particular, back in 1977. This is me talking. That Bernstein said back in 1977 there were at least 300 major people in the media. And that of course, was before the alternative media. There was some alternative media, but it was before the Internet, which has exponentially increased the alternative media. Okay, back then, if there were 300 people working directly for the CIA in the controlled media, there's many more today. Okay, inasmuch as we can tell that Mike was a very critical, linear thinker. He liked lists. He liked to put together. I mean, he thought long and hard, I believe, about all of these points that he was making. And then he further divides his points into A, B, C, D. He was a linear thinker, a very, very critical thinker. I feel like I'm channeling him today, but whatever it is, he was a linear thinker who wasn't just throwing out stuff, theories. Okay, then he goes on to say, this is the basis upon which the research for this volume was undertaken. Upon this foundation, final judgment ties together all of the facts and shows how the state of Israel and its spy agency, the Mossad, collaborated with not only the CIA, but also key elements in organized crime and in the anti-Castro Cuban community in order to orchestrate the assassination of John F. Kennedy and the cover-up. Okay, another thing, this is my more interjection. A good teacher, a good presenter, will tell you up front what they are going to teach you, what they are going to tell you, what they are going to present to you. They will tell you up front. Then at the end of their presentation, they will tell you what they told you. That is the mark of a good presenter. This is Mike at his best. All of his books are pretty much the same way. But in this volume, the one that should stand forever as far as the JFK assassination goes, he has done this in a remarkable way. In a very concrete, linear, critical thinking way, so that we understand there's not going to be any, after we get done reading this book, after you get done reading this book, there's not going to be any question in your mind as to what he said. You're not going to say, now what are we supposed to believe? Let's see, was it the information about the what was it, the CIA, or was it the media, was it the, what was it, the mafia? No, you are going to know exactly what he believed. And he leaves it up to us. He doesn't say, okay, this is what you must believe. This is what I hope you'll believe. He leaves it up to us. He trusts us enough. In presenting this information, he trusts the readers enough to allow them to draw their own conclusions. He's not imposing his views upon us. He's presenting the evidence and saying, okay, this is what I have found to be evidence. These are the connections I have made. And then he's leaving it up to our critical thinking. He's leaving the final judgment up to us. Okay, let me check in the chat room. Okay. I'm not even going to read that, Mer. but I think you're right. Okay. Subtitle in the first chapter. Some of the facts presented, while not necessarily new, have been available to researchers for decades. However, many researchers regrettably have not been looking in the right direction. That, of course, is not their fault. See? There he goes. He's given people the benefit of the doubt. No ad hominem attacks here. Additional information, particularly in regard to Kennedy's difficult relations with Israel, and how U.S.-Israeli relations changed drastically as a result of JFK's murder, has really only recently come into the public forum. In final judgment, we will explore this information in detail. It is this information, and this, the chapter one was always part of the book. Okay, it's part of all of the editions. It isn't something that he added in his final edition. In final judgment, he says, we will explore this information in detail. It is this information, long unavailable to even the most dedicated researchers, that ties all of the previous data together. The remarkable scenario presented in final judgment logically incorporates all of the commonly accepted theories into one broadly encompassing theory that not only makes sense, but which brings the diverse elements in the conspiracy together full circle. It is for this reason that final judgment truly lives up to its name. The theory presented in the pages of final judgment has been greeted with the charge of anti-Semitism, a standard attack directed upon any utterance even vaguely critical of Israel and its misdeeds. However, the author leaves it up to the basic honesty and open-mindedness of the readers to determine whether or not the theory presented in this volume makes sense. And he's still calling it a theory. Okay? He's not calling it absolute evidence. He's calling it a theory. Okay. What happened? Okay. Here, in essence, is the basis of the theory presented and documented, sometimes in excruciating detail in the pages which follow, that during his presidency, John F. Kennedy alienated three major international body power blocks, the American CIA, organized crime, and Israel and its American lobby. Remember that the American lobby, AIPAC, is a propaganda arm of Mossad. Point number two, or the next point, that in each case, Kennedy's continued tenure in the White House was perceived by each of these power groups as a threat to its very existence. The next point, that each of these major international power blocks was closely intertwined with the others, often on several levels. The next point, that when Kennedy's presence in the White House became so intolerable that these forces came together in a wide-ranging conspiracy that resulted in JFK's murder, that the power of these forces together over the American media played a vital role in the assassination conspiracy cover-up. Final judgment explores in detail the little-known behind-the-scenes war between John F. Kennedy and Israel, and documents how U.S. policy toward Israel and the Arab world underwent a drastic reversal upon JFK's assassination. This book also documents that not only the intimate collaboration between the Meyer-Lansky crime syndicate and the Mossad, but also the similar incestuous relationship between the Lansky Syndicate and Israel's allies in the CIA. We will also focus on the singularly important role of Meyer Lansky's positioning in the joint Mossad-CIA-organized crime nexus that came together in the JFK assassination. Lansky's own role in the JFK assassination conspiracy has been continually ignored or otherwise suppressed, even by those very authorities who claim that the mafia killed JFK. As we shall see, Meyer Lansky was in fact the real overlord of the international crime syndicate, many of the mafia bosses who allegedly masterminded the JFK assassination were indeed Lansky henchmen, frontmen, underlings. The basic facts have virtually all been published in previous works on the JFK assassination and in other studies on the subjects of U.S.-Israeli relations, international intelligence intrigue, and organized crime. It is only now, however, that all of the facts have been finally placed together in a neatly constructed jigsaw puzzle that presents a whole picture in its rather simple entirety. It is not, as we shall see, as complex as it might at first appear. However, the bottom line is this. It is clear that not only did Israel have a motive for participating in the JFK assassination, but it did indeed play a critical part in the conspiracy. Another subtitle, The Theory of Power Politics at Work. The theory that the conspiracy outlined here was a criminal enterprise involving power politics in its highest and lowest forms. This volume presents, we're going to another list. Point one, presents international intrigue above and beyond the then crumbling U.S.-Israeli relationship. It was crumbling. Point two, examines the tragic reality of American involvement in Southeast Asia, which Kennedy sought to prevent, the final result of which guaranteed A, Israel's dominance in Middle East affairs as the United States became bogged down in Asia, B, Southeast Asian drug profits for Meyer Lansky's global drug racket, operating in conjunction with the Mossad's ally, the CIA, and C, multi-billion dollar profits in arms production for the backers of Israel's ally, Lyndon Johnson, in the military-industrial complex, which goes back to what I said earlier about Congress and all those 535 people going to Washington, not necessarily as millionaires, but as just regular people. Hey, well, I'm going to Washington. I'm going to change everything around. You just vote for me, and I'm going to go there. And boy, I'm going to turn it on its head. No, these people come back millionaires. Where do you think they got that money? What, on speaking tours? No. Because they invested in military-industrial complex and the pharmaceutical industry, you name it, they invest in it, okay? They're not there to help us. Get over it, boys and girls. Next point. Explains how the CIA, so closely tied to Israel, was able to continue its subterranean covert activities in Southeast Asia and elsewhere after the elimination of JFK. So the drug trade is going to continue. They're going to keep it up through Afghanistan. Drug trafficking, drug trafficking was very big, and illegal drugs. And then, of course, they also wanted to engage in pharmaceutical drugs, which is another story altogether, which I kind of cover in what somebody referred to as my, I don't even want to say it. I'm going to use the word trashy, but that's not the word that he used. Okay. All righty. Explains how the CIA, I'm back to Mike's book, so closely tied to Israel, was able to continue its subterranean covert activities in Southeast Asia and elsewhere after the elimination of JFK. JFK, along with his brother, would have cracked down on all the illegal drugs. And when you consider the growth of illegal drugs followed by so-called legal drugs, boy, I mean, that's an interesting link. This goes very deep. The JFK assassination was not a singular event. It was a piece of the puzzle, and we are still, the puzzle, the roadmap is still there. We need to connect all of what, prologue is history. History is prologue. It has to do with what's going on now. Never separate that. Never say, oh, that was in the past. Don't worry about it. Okay, point. Next point. Illustrates how certain special interests, the anti-Castro Cuban movement and organized crime, think Bronfman here, could be manipulated by another special interest, the CIA-Mossad alliance, in pursuit of a mutual goal, ending JFK's presidency. Another point points out why the various elements involved in the conspiracy were working in conjunction with one another and covering up the facts about the assassination. They all benefited. All of these groups benefited. Next point details how the controlled mafia, long a primary collaborator with the Lansky-linked pro-Israel lobby in the United States, promoted the Warren Commission's lone nut solution of the JFK murder and sought to silence critics of the official explanation. You just have a commission. They issue their conclusions. Everybody buys into their conclusions, their consensus. I use the word consensus a lot in my latest book. If you buy into the consensus, then you'll stop asking questions. Because the consensus is, well, this little group of people got together and we decided what you're supposed to believe. And if you don't believe what our consensus says, then we are going to go after you. Okay, the next point reveals how the anger and disgust of one powerful man, in this instance, David Ben-Gurion of Israel, could result in a vendetta carried out by means of a far-reaching conspiracy orchestrated through his own sphere of influence. Next point describes how key American political power brokers, such as J. Edgar Hoover and most particularly Lyndon B. Johnson, both connected to the Israeli-linked Lansky Crime Syndicate, were able to maintain their influence and expand it correspondingly upon the death of John F. Kennedy. Now, this is me just interjecting a thought. Whether you're talking about China and the Green Gang, which was the mafia of China, the Green Gang worked with the government. Governments have always wanted to control drugs, have always thought of drugs as, well, it's just a really wonderful way of controlling the people. And so when you're talking about a crime syndicate, and you're talking about the dissemination of drugs, and you're talking about the FBI, you need to ask yourself, well, okay, how was how was J. Edgar Hoover involved with the crime syndicate? Well, do you think that he may have had some part in making sure that the mafia was never really, that they didn't ever really clamp down on all the drug trafficking? How do you think all those drugs got into to all of the ghettos? I mean, do you think that this just happened? Do you think they were all growing their own and everything within the ghetto and making whatever they made, cocaine or whatever? No. Remember, there are no coincidences in certain areas. If there was meant to be, if they wanted to have people abstain from drugs, well, they probably would have made certain that the Lansky Crime Syndicate wasn't able to disseminate them. But when it's beneficial for both the government and the crime syndicate, that a major portion of the community, the major portion of the United States, be on mind control drugs, well, they're going to work together to get rid of somebody that was trying to stop all this. Okay, the next point demonstrates how low-level operatives such as Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby, both with a diverse array of strange connections, were utilized by conspirators at the top. See, they didn't know the whole story. They weren't at the top. They weren't making all the rules and regulations. These were conspirators, but they weren't top level. They were just in their own little compartmentalized conspiratorial construct. Okay, all of this taken together, they were at the bottom of the pyramid. All of this taken together makes the conspiracy outlined here one that is not only logical, but one that ties all of the most prominently mentioned conspirators together in a package that is all too uncomfortably neat. Now, how this book is organized. See, again, Mike organized his book very, very nicely. He's telling you what he's going to tell you, then he's going to tell you how to use the book in the best way that you can to get the most information. Okay. How this book is organized, a reader's guide. In order to outline the conspiracy described in the pages of Final Judgment, it is necessary from the beginning to consider that conspiracy in its historical context. A wide array of players were involved, and their integral links with one another and with the diverse forces behind the conspiracy make it prudent at this juncture to provide the reader with an overview of the material about to be presented. Here, however, is a summary of the chapters which follow and which presents the necessary outline of the approach we take in laying the groundwork upon which we reach our final judgment. Okay. Again, evidence of his humility. He's never going to come, you know. Even after he wrote this book, even after he read 100 books on the JFK assassination, he never said, ever, I'm an expert on the JFK assassination. That's a true mark of humility. Okay, he talks about the Mossad, he talks about the JFK, LBJ, and Israel. And I believe that I have gone through this particular part already. But he tells you what is in each chapter so that you can, and honestly, the book is such that if you didn't want to read from chapter 1 all the way to the end, and be sure and read all the back matter, but if you didn't want to do that, You can skip around. You can skip around, and each chapter is complete within itself. And if you read, for instance, chapter 6, it outlines how the assassination of John F. Kennedy permitted the Lansky Crime Syndicate and the Israeli lobby-linked Lyndon B. Johnson, a favorite of Israel's allies in the CIA, to assume the presidency and begin an incredible reversal of JFK's Middle East policies, thereby strengthening Israel's global hand. This important chapter also demonstrates how Israel, the CIA, and the Lansky Syndicate stood to benefit from American involvement in the Vietnam War, a little explored aspect of that unfortunate period. So, again, he's telling you what's in each chapter, and this is in addition to the contents. Certainly, you may look at the contents, all of which in the ebook is hyperlinked so that you can click on the chapter you want to visit, and it takes you right to the chapter. So in addition to the contents, remember what I said previously in my speed reading class in college. Said a good book has an index, a good book has a great contents, and I mean, he's following this good book kind of format. Okay, here's another thing that I think would be really, here's an idea. I mean, it's just a thought. Now, if I still had children in school and I wanted to devote, and I was homeschooling, I wouldn't have children in the government school. That's the first thing. If my children were of school age, I would totally not take them anywhere near a public school, okay, a government school. I would homeschool them. I would devote probably an entire month, and I think, you'd have to consider age-appropriate material, but I think that this book should be the document, the book used to educate homeschoolers on a particular event in history that they need to know about. It would help them to understand how politics and criminals work together. I think it would be a very, very good text for homeschooling. So people, those listeners who homeschool, I hope that they will consider using this book. Okay. Let me look and see. Yes, that person was Matilda Krim, I mean, there's just all kinds of things that we need to think about. I'm just kind of backing up, scrolling up to see if there's a question that I may have missed. Yes. Okay. All righty. Lots of very wonderful comments. And I'm going to check the email here and see if there's any email. Would you believe I forgot to check the board to see if there's any callers? Oh, thank goodness. I don't mean that. There's no callers. But if there had been, I would have felt bad that I'd been ignoring you. So anyway, let me get back to the book. And anyway, he tells you what, and we've covered some of this stuff, so I'm going through. I love the appendix, the appendices, because there's so much good material. And the appendices, which he also covers in this first chapter, he tells you what's in each appendix. And it's easy to go from section to section and think, oh my gosh, we've got to cover this on this day, and we've got to cover this, because there is so much here to cover and to look at that one just really, really does need to read the entire book. And I hope that you all do that, because it is a remarkable book. And so I'm going to go to page 372. Inasmuch as we've talked about the cover-up, I'm going to visit that page, and hopefully we can get that. Excuse me. Hopefully we can get that done. Okay, the cover-up. For his own part, it was while, and we're talking about George H.W. Bush, served as CIA director, that the Senate Intelligence Committee was probing the connections between Jack Ruby, Lee Harvey Oswald, the CIA organized crime, and the anti-Castro operations conducted by the CIA and its mob collaborators. As Anthony Kimmery comments, and I quote, with his own ties to those operations, Bush was now in charge of what the CIA would and wouldn't divulge, unquote. As director of the CIA, Bush frustrated committee investigators' requests for specific information in the agency's files on Oswald and Ruby, and downplayed revelations about CIA involvement. Memoranda written by Bush on the Intelligence Committee's investigation of Oswald and Ruby's links to the CIA and organized crime show he was especially interested in the committee's probing, not only of what the CIA knew about the events in Dallas and didn't report to the Warren Commission, but to what extent, if any, the agency was complicit in Kennedy's murder. Kimmery quotes, and we're talking about an author, an ex-CIA contract agent and Bay of Pigs veteran who claims to have been associated with Bush and CIA's anti-Castro operations in the early 1960s. Bush, George H.W., was worried about something during those investigations when he was DCI, right? All right. He was worried it was going to be found out that he worked for the company and was tied right into all the messes the CIA was in during the late 50s and 60s, early 60s. David Robb, writing in Spy magazine, points out that although Bush was asked in January of 1992 whether or not he had looked into the JFK assassination during the time he was CIA director, that Bush said, and I quote, "No, I didn't have any curiosity," unquote. However, Robb has pinpointed a September 15, 1976 memo to the deputy director for the CIA, which reads as follows, and I quote, "A recent Jack Anderson story referred to a November 1963 CIA cable, the subject matter of which had some UK journalist observing Jack Ruby visiting Santo Trafficante in jail. Is there such a cable? If so, I would like to see it. This is the same cable that Mike Hadigan, minority counsel for the SSC, that's the Senate Select Committee, had asked for. The memo was signed GB, above the handwritten name George Bush. Clearly, George Bush was just a bit more curious about the inquiries into the JFK assassination than he would have us believe." Okay? And curiously enough, there is this interesting tidbit unearthed by Spy magazine suggesting that Bush had an inordinate interest in JF Kennedy's welfare. According to Spy, and I quote, "Internal FBI memos indicate that on November 22, 1963, reputable businessman George H.W. Bush telephonically advised that he wanted to relate some hearsay that he had heard in recent weeks, date and source unknown. he advised that when James Parrott had been talking of killing the president when he comes to Houston, quote unquote. Parrott was a 24-year-old young Republican who regularly picketed Kennedy administration officials when they came to Houston. The FBI also learned that the Secret Service had been told in 1961 that Parrott had said, and I quote, he would kill President Kennedy if ever he got near him, unquote. Parrott denies the charges. Spy asks, not entirely satirically, and I quote, was Bush just being a misguided do-good weenie, or was he trying to throw the FBI off the trail, unquote. It was after George Bush left the CIA in 1977 that he continued to maintain close ties with business interests, which had in turn intimate ties to Israel and its lobby in this country. Returning home to Houston, Bush was named to serve as Executive Committee Chairman of the First International Bank of Houston, the family-owned enterprise of the heirs of Texas billionaire H.L. Hunt. The Hunts were owners of and had 15% controlling interest in Gulf Resources and Chemical Corporation, a Houston-based company which controlled half of the world's supply of lithium, which is an essential component in the production of hydrogen bombs. Among the board members of Gulf Resources was George A. Butler, chairman of Houston's Post Oak Bank, controlled by one W.S. Farish III, often described as one of Bush's closest confidants. Gulf Resources had taken over the Lithium Corporation of America as a wholly owned subsidiary some years previously. Among the directors of both Gulf Resources and the Lithium Corporation was John Roger Menke, who was also a director of Israel's Hebrew Technical Institute. All of this is significant in that it was during that period that Israel was continuing in its secret development of nuclear weaponry, the most monumental issue of conflict between John F. Kennedy and Israeli Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion, discussed in detail in Chapter 5. Perhaps, then, it is no surprise that Robert Allen, the chairman of Gulf Resources, a non-Jew not known as a contributor to Jewish causes, received the so-called Torch of Liberty Award from the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, of B'nai B'rith, the self-styled civil rights organization that functions as an American intelligence arm for Israel's Mossad. It was in Chapter 8 that we first met another Torch of Liberty recipient, gangster Morris Dalitz, a longtime top-level associate of Meyer Lansky and an investor in the shadowy Permandex Corporation, which, as we saw in Chapter 15, played a central role in the JFK assassination conspiracy. Okay, we have 90 seconds. We're going to have to pick this up on Monday, if that's okay with all the listeners. And I hope that you will say yay, and that you like doing what we're doing. Anyway, bless you for listening today, and please be a critical thinker, and think for yourself, and read this book, and make up your own mind. Okay, take care. Talk to you on Saturday, and hopefully again on Monday and next Thursday. Bye for now. It starts with you and me.